Okay. Thank you.
Everyone?
Yes. Okay. hope everyone enjoyed their break last week. I certainly enjoyed being in Florida in January. Just as a scheduling note, just to keep in mind that we have a shiur for a few more weeks, but then the week of a President's Day week, I think that's the 13th that week, right, so I will be away. So that, but until then, we have, I think, three more shiurim, but then we'll be away off that week. We left off in the middle of Perek Gimel, and we've been trying to divide this up into units, and I'm actually hoping, notwithstanding starting a little late, I hope we can finish another, so to speak, mini unit this evening, which is to cover three psukim, which I have generally entitled the blame game, which is whatever the 13th is that week.
Yeah, okay.
So I'll give you, I'll speak to you, you'll get three more warnings before I leave. But I was just,
sorry,
my head was in Florida, so I thought I would share that with you. So basically, we saw last week Hashem confronting Adam and, the famous Ayeka Pasuk, and why are you hiding, where are you going, and Adam's response to that. And now we have Hashem's charge to Adam, and his blame on Chava, and then Chava in turn blaming on the snake. The reason I call that a unit, because the Pasuk subsequent to that is going to begin then Hashem's meeting out of punishments. So we've got Hashem tracking Adam and Chava down, and we'll have the accusation and the blame, which is not necessarily the same thing as denial, but the blame today, and then hopefully Mirtz Hashem next week picking up with the beginning of the punishments. So let's begin with Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is what we were up to. We left off after Pasuk Yud, where Adam had responded that I ran away and I'm hiding because I realized I'm naked, I'm embarrassed. So Hashem says to them in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ayomer, God says, Mi gid lecha ki ei romata? Who told you you're naked? Hamin ha'eitz asher tzivisicha, levilti achal mimenu achalta? Is it possible that this tree, the unnamed tree, that I told you, I commanded you not to eat from, that you ate from it? So what's strange about this pasuk? What would we want to understand a little better? What's not self-evident?
Well, obviously, Adam must have known that this was a rhetorical kind of.
So first of all, is that really, is it a question or is it a rhetorical question? That's number one.
Yeah.
Right? Or did God not know? Was God searching? I don't know if I told you this. I had an assistant. Well, this was actually probably the method of choice, probably the principal, but also of the assistant principal. I don't know how common this is, but it strikes me as a characteristically high school approach to discipline. Where if there was ever a problem, especially if there was some, large group and the principals didn't know who did it, some kind of a prank or something, and so they would call you in, and the attitude would be, I know you did it. Just admit it. And, we'll get off, that kind of thing, So that's where the principal's clear, didn't know anything, and they were fishing for information. So is that what's going on here? Hashem is fishing for information? Could it be that you did that? I mean, it's hard to believe, right? So if that's not the case, then what? Another question about this pasuk.
It's a sort of a non-sequitur. The second half had nothing to do with the first half.
I mean, it depends on how we understand them, but yes. Okay, what about, mi gid lecha ki eromata? What do you mean, who told you you're... I mean, it's like, naked is not like some, state secret. Like, who told you? Did someone have to tell you? You didn't know by yourself? I mean,
clearly, there was no naked even before.
Right, good, exactly. What's the epiphany here that Adam has copped to that Hashem is so intrigued and fascinated by? I mean, not only does Hashem know everything anyway, even if you didn't have to be Hashem to know. I mean, it's obvious. So what's he getting at? Whether it's the first half or the second half of the pasuk. Very good. I think those are issues that all have to be addressed. Let's continue. So how does Adam respond? What is Adam's response? Pasuk Yud Beis. For Yomer ha'adam. Da-da-da-dam. Ha'isha. Asher nasata imadi. The woman that you gave me. He nas nali min ha'etz v'ochel. She's the one who gave it to me. And that's why I ate. How many excuses is Adam making in this pasuk?
First of all, he's admitting it's the tree by the direction in terms of the question.
Or that he did wrong, right? It's actually, it's not a denial as much as it is an excuse.
Right.
But how many excuses is he making?
Well, one, that the woman gave it to him, and two, that
good. Very, very good. So we'll have to see that in the Mefarshim, right? I think if you read it closely, there's at least one, but there may be two separate points Adam's making, right? One is to shift blame on Chava, but there's perhaps a lesser known thing going on here, which is that he seems to be even doing more than that. He seems to be shifting blame on Hashem. You gave me this woman. Right? So that's really very intriguing. Could you imagine talking to Hashem that way? Right, yeah. Right, right. That's going to get you real far. Right. Blame the boss. That'll help. Right, right, right. So it all started here. And husbands blame wives. Right? And human nature is to blame somebody. Right? So what, which is why we see the next pasuk. Vayomer Hashem Elokim Leisha. So now Hashem turns his attention. Chava's right there. And who knows what she's doing as Adam's, you know, throwing her into the bus. You know, so he looks to Chava and says, you know, it's nu. Mazos asis. What did you do? Adam said it's your fault. Tomer Isha. Well, it's not really my fault. After all, Hanachosh Hishiani Beochel. It was the snake's fault. He tricked me, and therefore I ate.
Is there an indication that Adam would have known that the fruit that he was getting from Chava was in fact made?
Good, very good. So we'll see in a moment, during the shir, there's one of the Mefarshim who suggests that that was part of his excuse. Because, go back to Adam's statement, go back to Pasuk Yud Beis for a second. How does Adam refer to the episode?
She gave me from the tree. The tree.
Exactly. He does not say a hadas. He just says the tree.
I went back to the pasuk where it says, and it doesn't seem
right. Good. So most of the Mefarshim are silent on this, and I would take their silence as assuming that he did know. But we'll see. There is at least one Mefarish who suggests that that's part of his excuse. Now, whether it's a good defense or not, that probably gets back to, we saw those different Mefarshim when Chava actually gave her E. We saw different opinions in the Medrash. Did he know? Did she? So, right, we saw one opinion in the Medrash that she didn't give him the fruit. She squeezed the fruit into a juice. Maybe he didn't know what it was. So whether it was a good defense or not is probably two opinions in Chazal. But whether he invokes it, so that seems to be a machlokus in the Mefarshim, and we'll see that in a bit.
On the basis of the Pshat, it's almost impossible to deal with, because Hashem uses the expression
He doesn't say, what tree are you talking about?
Right.
I was just sitting in the corner saying to Hillel all day. Me? What, me?
He's just responding to this exact same line.
And therefore,
Hashem says, the tree, and he says, yeah, the tree.
So you think that's an admission or a denial?
I think it's an admission.
Okay, fine, right, that's what, good. All right, good. Very good. Now, just getting back to the last pasuk, the pasuk of Chava, so, the question is whether this is also similarly one or two excuses. Right? We asked, was Adam just blaming Chava or was he also blaming Hashem? So the same question should be asked about Chava. Right? And it could be understood in both ways. Either she's just blaming the snake, but who could she also be blaming? She could also be blaming, even though it's not in the pasuk like it is a little bit in Chava, in the fruit, but she could also be blaming, no, not Adam,
but Hashem.
What'd he do?
For not.
That would be really, I mean, that's not in the pasuk at all. And I don't even know if it makes. But if you wanted to make a parallel, the symmetry of the point you yourself made was, maybe she's also blaming Hashem. Right? Adam may be saying, you know, it's your fault, you gave me Chava. So, who created the snake? Right, so let's... Right, so these are some of the issues that come out just from the...
point, Rabbi, but Hashem's question to Chava is much...
Oh, very good.
A whole difference,
you know? Right, good. So let's contrast those. Very good. So look. When we saw Pasuk Yud Aleph, what did Hashem say to Adam? Hamin ha'eitz asher tzivisicha levilt yachamer achalta. He's very direct and very pointed. Did you eat from the tree you weren't supposed to? But what does he say to Chava? He's not specific at all. He says, ma'azos asisa, what did you do? Now, why might it be deliberately vague? Because how many things wrong did she do? One or two? Two! I'm not even talking about how she interacted with the snake and maybe she exaggerated the isser that we've discussed in the past, maybe that's, but even just from the moment that she is, you know, so to speak, vis-a-vis Hashem's siboy, right? She, you could argue, did more than one thing. She ate the tree herself, which is a problem, and she gave it to Adam. So it couldn't, Hashem could, you know, maybe we'll have to see, maybe the general terminology when Hashem confronts her is because he's also not just confronting her about one thing, he's confronting her about two. One of the things I think is so interesting, we'll have to see now how the Mefarshim deal with these ideas, but just as we read these three psukim, so in many different levels of these psukim, what seems to be a consistent kind of internal pattern of these three as a unit is there's kind of like this double entendre. Each phrase has a possible additional meaning. You know, when Hashem accuses Adam, what does he have in mind? When Adam responds to Hashem, is he just making one statement, is he making two? When Hashem confronts Chava, is he making one or is he two? When Chava responds to Hashem, is she making one or is she making two? In each one of the steps along this road, we have the pasuk itself, but then we have, either because of, for logical reasons, or even from the vagueness of some of the phrases in the Torah, it's open to interpretation that perhaps there's more than one thing going on. So let's go back now to Hashem's... Yes, please.
I guess it's interesting. The story starts, snake, Chava, Adam, and then it goes in the reverse, or the other way.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a very interesting thing.
Why did Hashem ask Adam what he did wrong? Why did he ask him church?
He was the only one who got the seed.
Very good. That's also right.
It's also mashma here that it's not repeated to her the same way.
Does she?
Spoke before that maybe she.
We've discussed. We've seen two opinions whether she heard directly from Hashem. Or, right, and I don't remember now who it was. It was about a month ago or whatever it was. A few shurim ago, I forget what it was. Was it a medrash? Where the snake exploited that, right? Remember, the snake exploited that. According to one of the opinions of the medrash, I think it was, the snake was trying to exploit that. How do you know what Hashem said? You weren't there, but I was. Right, so, we'll see. So, you guys are very much on the ball, and I think we've teased out a lot of the issues. We'll see almost everything you've alluded to, and I hope some more, in some of these mefarshim. So, the first thing we want to address is in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Hashem, you know, what is Hashem's question to Adam? I mean, like, obviously Hashem knew he was naked, and the truth is, what does he mean, he did? Like, who told you? Like, he didn't need anyone to whisper a secret to Noah. To Adam, he knew it as well. What's going on in those psukim? So, there seems to be a consistent approach in the mefarshim. Let's take a look at Rashi. Some nuances, but a lot of the mefarshim seem to really point in the same direction as you yourselves have anticipated. Rashi, mihi gilecha, who told you? So, says Rashi, me'ayin lecha ladas, from where did you know, where could you have come to know, ma boshes yesh ba'omid arum, that there's some embarrassment or shame in standing naked. So what is Rashi doing? Rashi is completely shifting the focus of the question. It's not about who told you you're naked, or because who needed to tell? Of course they knew that. But apparently when Adam in the previous pasuk said, I hid because I'm naked, I was embarrassed because I'm naked, so now Hashem says, well, who told you? What's so embarrassing about that? We asked, what's new here? He was always naked. According to Rashi, that's exactly the point. Hashem is saying, what changed? You weren't embarrassed, you weren't hiding from me before this, and to get just for the sake of illustration, we saw the Gemara last week that said that this all took place in 10 hours on one day. So let's just, for argument's sake, use that. So for the previous 9 hours, you weren't hiding from me, you weren't embarrassed, and yet you were just as naked. So why all of a sudden now? What now changed? And again, Hashem is asking, again, not about something that he didn't know, because of course Hashem knew, and not about actual clothing or unclothing, because again, that's also obvious that Adam knew. Something much more subtle and much more sophisticated. You're embarrassed and you're telling me that's what you were hiding, like that's your excuse. Okay, you think you got out of it because of that? Hagufa. So why were you embarrassed? What all of a sudden changed? Could it be, and now you read the end of the pasuk into this, could it be, as Rashi says in the next Dibra Maschil, Bitnia, this is a rhetorical question, could it be that you ate from that tree? Is that all of a sudden what changed? All of a sudden that gave you this da'as, this knowledge, which allowed you to be ashamed? So this idea, which is already, you know, in its succinct form alluded to by Rashi, is teased out and developed with some nuances by some of the other mefarshim. So, for example, if you take a look at the first source on your sheet, again, the Mizrahi, as you recall, we've used him a lot, the Mizrahi, who himself was a Rishon, but he's not writing a commentary, unlike the other mefarshim on this page, the Mizrahi is not writing a commentary on the Torah, he's writing a commentary on Rashi. He's one of the super commentaries, a mefarshim on Rashi. So with this little comment in Rashi, which is a little bit terse, so the Mizrahi teases out Rashi. What does he say? He's defending it. How does Rashi know that this is what Hashem is asking? Not about the actual nakedness, but about his shame. The Im Lokein, says the Mizrahi, because if it's not the case, what kind of phrase is it? Mihi gidlecha de ka'amar. What kind of phrase is Hashem saying? Who told you? You need a big secret? You need someone to tell you that you're naked? What kind of phrase is that in the Torah? Who told you, Adam? even someone who's completely blind, anyone who, you don't have to know anything to know that you're naked. El al karcha, rather, it must be, Lamanu is coming to teach us, Sha'abavor, Darche had snias hudaka amar. Hashem's not asking about the actual nakedness, he's asking about this newfound snias that Adam was articulating in the previous pasuk. I'm embarrassed, I'm sanua, I'm shy, that's why I'm covering myself. Shaloa haya makir samitchila, because after all, Adam didn't have that awareness beforehand. Initially, el achash, achameis adas, shedichnas yetzahara b'achila. So only once he had this new sense of, as we've seen before, sexuality, and all of a sudden he realized that those private parts of the body are different, in fact, than the nose, the arm, and the ears, which is what, as we saw some of Farshim point out previously, heretofore, Adam had no, there was no difference in his perception of one part of the body over the other. All of a sudden, now he realizes it, whoa, now I have to be tanua, now I have to cover. So that, again, the Mizrahi hinges, and again, I think some of you pointed that out when we were reading the Pasuk, that that's almost like a giveaway that something's going on here. Mi gidlecha. Well, you need someone to tell you you're naked? The fact that the phrase is used that way, so that is indicative, perhaps, that there's something more going on. In fact, that is the point that the Mizrahi makes.
Could it be that it's maybe the fact that Hashem took a more subtle approach, a sophisticated approach, that it's kaviyachal modeling a parenting strategy?
Or in general, we will see. Yes, we will see. The Sforno and others point this out, that the way Hashem is interacting with them is he keeps on giving them opportunity to do tshuva. He doesn't just come out and blast them, right? And he's not doing it, which when you could read the psukim, I have to admit, you could read the psukim as he's kind of torturing them. I mean, this is a much more torturous thing. I think we've mentioned this in previous shurim, that the anxiety is being built. You know, each time Hashem, you know, asks one of these leading, open-ended questions, it's like, you know, sometimes we have this in our own lives, like, just come out and tell me, like, I know you know I did it, so just say it already, you know? Like, the anxiety, the tension is building each time. And you could argue that, at least in Pshat and Psukim, but I think the Mefarshim don't take that approach, that Hashem is doing this to, so to speak, torture them or punish them. In fact, on the contrary, some Mefarshim point out that each time Hashem is doing this, he's waiting for them to take the approach of, Chatasi, it's my fault. But yet, they don't do it. They don't do it. They play, as I call this year, the blame game. Take a look at the next source on the sheet, the Sforno. He says, also, what's being referred to here, not your actual state of being clothed or unclothed, but rather yediyas hatov hara, the fact that all of a sudden you have a moral compass. Kirum ata, they're referring to your nakedness. Shepizvil zeh, tia arum, ro'ilis kasos. Not that all of a sudden you know you're naked. Of course you know you're naked, but now all of a sudden you seem to know that that's inappropriate, that you're covering yourself. Again, same idea as the Mizrahi and Rashi seems to have said. The Abar Benel also has the same general approach, but he elucidates it with a little bit more shaklavataria back and forth. He says, example, source number three. Hine, Hishivu Hashem Yizbarach. Hashem, after Adam had said, this is why I'm hiding, so Hashem responds to him, Mihigid Lecha, who told you? Namely, Kolomar, that is to say, Hine, Dvarcha, Sochum Zazza. Adam, you're contradicting yourself. Mitad Echad, on the one hand, Amarta, Sheshamarta, Kol, Mitzvah, Sagan. You said, I guess that should have been a cough, that's a typo. Or maybe she said Koli. I'm not sure. I don't have a Barbadel here with me, but I was typing it earlier. Point is, on the one hand, you're claiming in the previous pasuk that you're just doing everything I told you to do. You're a big tzaddik. You're fearful of Hashem, and you're only keeping my mitzvos. On the other hand, mitzad acher, amarta sh'ata arum, you're admitting that you know you're naked. V'zei em shoshetedan, you couldn't have known this. Emlo achrei ha'achila me'etz, unless you had eaten from the tree. Kine kodem loze aroma, you said you were naked the first 9 hours of the day, but yet you weren't hiding, you didn't feel any embarrassment. All of a sudden, who told you now? What you didn't know until now. And then he goes back to the pasuk, and that's how it concludes. Is that because you ate from this tree? And he says again, this is, we've seen this idea from other mefarshim. So the Barbanel continues, as I alluded to before, and it's because you've eaten this tree that you're much more focused and frankly involved in actions of sexuality, and you're aware of the fact that this is not all, you know, kedusha necessarily, and this is not all as parv as just eating a sandwich for lunch. So the fact that you have this awareness, by definition, willy-nilly, implies that you did what you weren't supposed to do, which gave you the awareness. Yet at the same time, you know, in this sense, it's, I don't know if it's a model for parenting or for a DA cross-examining a witness, but the point is he's trapping, so to speak, Adam in his own words. Yes?
Right. It's a little difficult to understand, I don't know, at least I understand the Mizrahi statement here when he says, because actually, the actual eating itself wasn't a reflection of the Yetzer Hara. I mean, if he knew, basically, that he wasn't allowed...
It was, you're saying, it was.
Right. In other words, it almost sounds like that the knowledge of his nakedness is that came from Yetzer Hara, and the Mizrahi says, Nichnas Yetzer Hara, as if all of a sudden, I mean, Yetzer Hara. But actually,
it's referring to something very specific there. It doesn't mean, it doesn't mean to do or not to do the right thing. This is, we've discussed this in the past, the Ramban, who seems to be caught in a catch-22, right? He seems to say that by eating from the Eitz HaDaat, they got Bechira Chofshes. So all the Mefarshim ask, well, if they didn't have free will, how'd they have the choice to eat from the tree? Because obviously something else was going on. So here also, you're right, you're making the point. If you just think of Yetzer Hara as motivation to do something wrong, so then if they didn't have it yet, how could they have eaten from the tree? Because I think here he means it very specifically. He means it referring to sexuality, the same way that Barbanel means it. The same
sense. It sounds like Bachiloso.
No, no.
All of a sudden, you can.
Yes, the answer is only after eating it you are become aware of the Yetzer Hara for sexuality. Not the Yetzer Hara in general to rebel or not to listen. Right, that's the focus of just like the Abravanel. That's the focus. It's on this idea of tznius. If you take a look at the Radak for a moment in the next source, you'll see it says also a similar idea. But and again, this idea we mentioned before, and I said alluded to this when Ellie asked before. I think this is the idea. Says the Radak, "Bahasheila ena lishmo ma'ane." Right, Hashem wasn't asking so he could get an answer, because Hashem knows the answer. Rather, he was asking so that hopefully Adam would have just said, yes, you're right, Hashem, I'm sorry, it's all my fault, I did the wrong thing. But unfortunately, again, that's not what happened. What did happen? Pasuk Yud Beis, Adam said, Ha'isha Asher Nasati Imadi, it's that woman you gave to me, he nasna li min etzva ochel, she's the one who gave me to eat. And what does Rashi say now in Pasuk Yud Beis? Asher Nasati Imadi, that you gave me, Khan, says Rashi, Kafar Batova. He is denying, he's being an ingrate. He's denying the favor, the wonderful Tova that Hashem gave him by giving him Chava. So this is Rashi's very succinct reference to a Gemara. If you take a look, I have it. It's not a long Gemara, but it's a little bit longer than two words, which is the Gemara in source number 5 on your sheet, the Gemara in Masechta Avodah Zarah and Daf Hei Amud Beis 5b. Tana Rabbanan, here, this is the larger context, has to do with this general Mida, this character trait, this bad character trait of being an ingrate. And there, the Gemara is in a different context, which I don't want to digress from our focus. But there, if you look towards the end of the first line, says Moshe, paraphrasing a pasuk from Devarim, Kfuye Tova, B'nei Kfuye Tova. Moshe is yelling at the Jewish people, is giving them Musar, you are ingrates, the son of ingrates. So in light of that, the Torah goes back. So it shows from this pasuk in Devarim why the people in the desert and the Midbar themselves are ingrates. And then going back on the other part of Moshe's statement, B'nei Kfuye Tova, and you're not just ingrates, you Jews of that generation, but you're the children. There's a, you know, a family tradition of being a Kfuye Tova, being an ingrate. After all, the pasuk says, and it quotes our pasuk, Isha Shana Sati Madi. So there's this kind of imprint, this negative Maisa Avos Simon Labanim that's imprinted in our psyche of not so much not taking responsibility, we'll see that in a moment, but being a Kafoy Tov, being an ingrate, which I have mentioned in other contexts, in my opinion, is the single worst meat that a person could have. I find that almost anything else I can be, you know, tolerate, at least in measure. To be an ingrate, to me, is like by far the worst meat a person, the most indefensible meat. But yet, it's always been a struggle for people, and you see right from the opening of creation, the first thing Adam wants to do is not just to avoid responsibility, which is a separate point, but you see Chazal here are focusing on a different point, not just avoiding responsibility, but also, so to speak, being ungrateful for the benefit, which he then uses as a way to get out of responsibility. But the first point is to be an ingrate. How does Rashi comment on that Gemara? Rashi makes an interesting comment. Lashon Gnaihu. When the Torah here says, Isha Nasata Imadi, you gave me this woman, that's not a nice way. You could say that about it in a positive way too, but he didn't mean it that way. That woman that you gave me, thank you so much, she's the one who did it. That's not what he said. That would be not taking responsibility. This is more than that. Lashon Gnaihu. You who gave it to me. That's how you read it. Shetola Hakalkala B'matnaso Shel Makom. He is hanging, so to speak, literally. He's making dependent this mess up, this mistake, on Hashem's presence. It's your fault, because you gave me this woman, and you know, she's the one who's supposed to be my helper, and look what happened. It's interesting, there's a Medrash, a Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, in the next source, who also, again, it's the same basic idea, but has a more elaborate suggestion of the dialogue taking place between Adam and Hashem. It's interesting that there is a tradition that some of you may be familiar with, of Adam having been born with like this outer skin, which is made of like fingernails, like this clothing of fingernails. So I don't know if there's any earlier sources, but this Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer makes that comment. So it's not our topic per se, but since I came across it, I included it in the source sheet. The Medrash here says, Ma haya levusha shel Adam Arishon. What was his initial when he was born? I mean, he would have been cold. I mean, he could have gotten, gotten the sniffles. And Hashem didn't make him literally just naked. Could it be? So says the Medrash, Or Tziporon. And it was like some kind of a skin of made up of fingernails. Furthermore, Va'anan kavod hamachas alav, and some kind of cloud which also covered him, which gave him protection. V'kevush ochel miperos ilon, once he ate from the eitz hadas, nivshad oro v'tziporon me'elav. He lost this protection of this fingernail protection. V'nestalka anan hakavod me'elav, and he also, the cloud left him as well, and it's because of that. Ra asma arum. In other words, this is again a way of, it's a different, slightly different perspective from the previous Mepharshim, who said he was always naked, so what did he all of a sudden now know? Well, from the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, actually something did change, because he had been maybe not wearing clothing like, you know, Paris fashions, but he was, he did have some kind of a protection. And now he had nothing. He was literally naked. He had nothing on him. But be that as it may, what's relevant for us, if you skip to the end of the line, is back to the dialogue. Amar Adam Afnehai HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem, Adam says to him, Ribon Kol Amin, Master of the Universe. Kishayisi Levadi. Locha Tasi Locha. Uh-huh. Listen, I had all that time by myself.
4 hours, whatever.
Whatever. You know, it was a lifetime. And those are not, those are in dog years, you know. That's a long time. I had all this time by myself, and I didn't do anything wrong. Elisha Isha Shebesa Etzli. It was only once that woman who you brought to me, Hihi Ticha Osi Midakecha. She's the one who took me away from your ways, who led me astray. Shemar, our pasuk says, Isha Shanasata Imadi. So again, it's the same idea, but it's more elaborated on. This is interesting. What is, just since we're in this source anyway, how does he continue with the Hashem's response? Kara, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Elisha, V'amar. Lo Hashem, then, okay, says Taka, let me call up Chava and see what she has to say for herself. And he says, Lo Dayech, Shechatas as Atmech. It's not enough that you sin yourself. Elish Chatos, as Adam, you had to make Adam sin as well. Amra Lafana, she has, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. She's got a built-in excuse. She says right away, Ribon Kol Amim, Hanocha Shisiach Dati. It wasn't my fault. The snake did it. And I mean, he doesn't put these words in her mouth, but we might as well, All that time that I wasn't talking to the snake, before the snake showed up, I didn't do anything wrong. Only the snake showed up, that's when I did something wrong. It's good enough for Adam, the blame game, right? Which is why when you're in a position of authority, when you allow that excuse once, you're opening up a can of worms, because if one person's going to do it, they're all going to think they can get away with it, right? Blame. This is mamish. So this is real life. This stuff spreads. This is a virus. When people don't take responsibility, it doesn't just stop with one person. Then there's a culture that's created, and you see that right away, very intensively. It spreads like fire. If it's good enough for Adam, says Chava, basically, it's good enough for me. Right, then Hashem, the Medrash points out that none of this ends up working because Hashem brings them all three and basically gives them all a patch, which is what we'll see hopefully in the beginning.
The point is when she gives her answer, he had already given his answer. He didn't get punched.
Nothing, at least not yet, right? As far as she knew it worked, that's right. Hashem didn't say, no, that's not a good excuse, right? So, and again, I think the reason was because had he punished Adam first, then that would have been prejudicing Chava for good, so to speak. Then Chava really would have been motivated to say, to fall on her sword, so to speak, and say, yes, I did it, that's my fault, and I take responsibility. Because she would have seen the excuse didn't work. In order for Adam, was given a fair shake, and Chava had to be given a fair shake, she couldn't have been given, so to speak, giving her an easier chance. If she had known, it's like, in all these, books or dramas, with the police, like if there's two partners and they're trying to get them both to, admit the... If you already tell them, the first one got in trouble for that, you're not exactly going to have going to really take... There's no reason that the second one's going to say the same thing when they know they got in trouble. So it wouldn't be fair, so to speak, to Adam for Chava to have seen Adam get punished first, because then Chava would have easily known that I can't use that excuse. Each one of them had to, so to speak, be given their own fair shot, not prejudice one way or the other, What are you going to do? Are you going to accept responsibility? Are you going to say you're sorry? Or are you going to play the blame game? And each one of them played the blame game.
Very similar to the...
Well, he doesn't get really a chance.
Similar to the hardening of...
Paro.
Paro, you know.
Right.
Why did he punish? You know, he had to harden his heart so he could withstand the punishment. It's the same thing here.
Well, he didn't harden their heart here, though.
No, I'm saying that to give her a fair shot.
Oh, I see. Yeah, right. Okay, well, he just had the delay. He had.
In other words, she would have been influenced. It's sort of the same idea. Just like Paro would have been right. Unnecessarily influenced by the punishment.
Right.
Would have been unnecessarily influenced by others.
Right. Take a look at the Radak for a second, and then we'll see the Ramban. The Ramban is an important source. But you see the Radak. It's another one, again, along the same line. Says the Radak, Atah, that Adam is saying to Hashem, Atah garamtali, right? Not that it's Chava's fault. It's your fault, Hashem. You caused it. Shasatili isha kazos, shesita osi lefamena. You gave me it wasn't that kind of wife. It was this kind of wife. You know, that's not the Beis Yaakov girl I wanted. I wanted the best girl in Mechala, not number two. Yeah, of course, exactly. So it's interesting. When I read originally these sources, I kind of rolled them all into one. But if you take a look at the Ramban here, the Ramban seems to suggest that perhaps these are two different arguments. And I don't know if it's necessarily machlokes, because I don't think they're necessarily contradictory. But the Ramban, you'll see, he thinks that what we've seen until now should really be more subtly analyzed in terms of the other Mefarshim as two different arguments, by which I mean as follows. Take a look at the end of the sheet. Ramban says, V'tam ha'isha shenathate imadi, right, that's what Adam says. Kolomer, that means to say, says the Ramban, ha'isha asher ata b'chbodecha nasata osi li le'ezer, this woman in your great kindness and in your honor you gave me to help me, he nas naliminates, she gave me from the tree. V'hayisi choshev, underlined part, says the Ramban, Adam says, I thought, shekol asher tamarei la'yi, yetli, le'ezer l'ho'il. You gave her to me, as you called it, as an ezer kenegdo, so I would assume that everything she does for me is le'ezer, is to help. You, it's a present from Hashem, wouldn't you think that she's only doing it, it must be... maybe it didn't look exactly right, but who am I to question? You gave me her laser, so I have to assume, I have every right to assume that everything she was doing must be, das Torah. Who am I to question? You gave me her, so I have to assume that she must be the right thing. Right? I'm noticing each stage of the shiur, different looks from each side of the room. Vizeu Masha Omar. But own show, and that's why we'll see subsequently in future weeks when Hashem punishes Adam. How does he say it? Hashem responds, but basically rejects that argument, and Taka blames him. You shouldn't have listened to her. You should have known what's right and wrong. Shalom, turn over the page. Bottom line, who's God and who's the human? I wasn't who's the woman. Who's the human? Chava is wonderful, and I gave her to be an Azer, and she should have known. But bottom line is, if you're not sure, when in doubt, go with God. Don't go with your wife, and don't go with your husband. Don't go with anybody else. Right? This is parallel to what concept? There's a halachic concept like this. Right? And the Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin, Divrei Harav, Divrei HaTalmid, Divrei Mishomim. If you have contradiction, the master says one thing, the student says another. Who do you listen to? Right? There's no excuse. The student told me. But if it's going against the teacher, so who do you listen to when you have a conflict, right, between the teacher and the student? You listen to the teacher. So to hear, Chava told you, that's an excuse. So that's the Ramban's approach. Okay, that's the Ramban's approach. Now again, I would have read all these sources as somehow wrapped up into one. But it's interesting that the Ramban sees what he's saying as slightly different than some of the other Mefarshim. Namely, because he then says, Barabu Seinu, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which we saw, which Rashi quoted, Kari no sobezeh, kokwe tova, said, touched up that Adam, when he did this, was an ingrate, he didn't appreciate it. Says the Ramban, Yirtzu lefaresh, the Gemara, or Rashi and others who follow, they were coming to explain, Sha'ona oso, that Adam was answering, quote, Atogaramtili ha-mikshol-azeh. You were the one, you God, capital U, were the one who caused me this mikshol. Shenasata li isha le'ezer, v'hi asasani laharshia. And she advised me to do something wrong. In other words, what the Ramban is suggesting is what we were kind of teasing out and we were kind of lumping together, but he's saying these are two separate points, and perhaps not all Mefarshim are saying the same thing. And so there's a difference between making an excuse or trying to avoid responsibility and blaming. Right? Those are two different things. The first point, which the Ramban says is my shita, all I'm saying, Ramban, to put it to Adam's words, is he's trying to avoid responsibility. Or another way of saying it's Chava's fault. But the point is, huh? Correct. 100%. Exactly. What can I do? I appreciate you what you did for me so much, but it's because I appreciate it so much and I know that this is a gift of Hashem, that's how I innocently got mixed up when she was advising me to do something. That's why. Because I appreciate it so much and I know there was such a generous gift from you, Hashem. So of course I got confused by anything that she told me. And Hashem's going to tell him, Adam, you know what, this is a nice excuse, but in the end it's lame and it ain't going to fly. But says the Ramban, that's not as far, or as so to speak, chutzpahdik, if you wanted to put into Adam's mouth. The other approach is has Adam being a little bit more chutzpahdik. Not just that he's, so to speak, evading responsibility by shifting blame to Chava, he's being a kofoy tov in Hashem, which the Ramban says is synonymous with those other mafarshim who really make the point strongly and directly. It's not Chava's fault, or it's certainly not my fault, it is your fault, Hashem. That's not just avoiding responsibility, that's blaming Hashem, which is chutzpahdik in the extreme, quite obviously. And in addition, this is what the Gemara was focusing on, has this element of being a kafwe tov, of rejecting the good. Whereas the Ramban wants to, so to speak, preserve a little dignity for Adam and say, you know, he didn't go all the way out on the ledge. He wasn't that chutzpahdik to Hashem. He still appreciated the goodness that Hashem gave him. He was just saying, what could I do? I got confused. You know, we got our signals crossed. You gave me this great gift. I thought that the gift was meant to help me be closer to you. So obviously anything she would have done would have been in that direction. And then the fact that Hashem rejects that is beside the point. But that's like, you know, that's like a freshman, you know, would talk to the principal. You know, Rashi is the way a senior might do it. You know, a little bit more chutzpah, a little bit more chutzpah. So it's interesting. Again, when I was reading the Mefarshim, I kind of wrapped it all into one. But you see from the Ramban that he thinks that there's really a difference. You know, how aggressive, how chutzpah, so to speak, is Adam in his denial? Is he just trying to shift blame? Or is he really looking to, so to speak, be resentful of Hashem to be an ingrate for the gift that he got?
Would you say that Hashem really is putting humanity on trial? Even though it's only two people.
In what sense?
In other words, he's not blaming Adam or Chava as individuals. They're interpreting it as such, and that's why they're pointing fingers at each other. But his motivation is to he has a taina on humanity. On humans rather than
I don't know if I would say it like you're saying it. What I would say I didn't say that either. Come on, Ethan, go at it. We're not going to have a Chava, we're going to have Ethan. They sound like a couple, Ethan and Ellie. Right, no, what I would say, which has been a theme of mine in the last few shurim, is that he's talking to them as individuals, but this is being played out, if you will, given who they were, given who he is, given where they are. So this is being played out on many levels. Meaning, I wouldn't just look at this as some kind of a metaphor for humanity or something like that. But on the other hand, I do think that given that these are the father and mother of humanity, that this was the way Hashem wanted the world to work in some idyllic way, and it clearly does not pan out the way Hashem would have otherwise wanted. So there's certain, what we call in other contexts, Ma'is Abba Simon Labanim, there's certain psychological truths that are being either played out or implanted. I'm not, sometimes it's one or the other, in this story, which do have universal consequences. That's true, which is why we saw in previous shurim, where we focused very much on the fact that there were so many of the, you know, when Chava is tricked by the snake, or when Chava then seduces Adam, we saw the Mefarshim very much did, sometimes unconsciously, but very often consciously in their Mefarshim, in their commentaries, were speaking about these things in universal terms. You know, the way what the Nachash did, for example, to exploit Chava. Right? That wasn't, like, it was true about Chava maybe as an individual, but as we stressed, and we saw some certain Mefarshim who were stressed themselves, that's not like a one-time thing in history. Or we saw an example, remember there was this incredible Medrash that spoke about, you know, why did Chava just, like, go her own way? Why did she feel the need to drag down Adam? So we saw, right, one Mefarish saying, you know, it's one thing if I'm going to die, but Chas Hashalom, Adam should get remarried. Right, like how visceral, how human was that? You know, and again, I think there's a truth. I don't know if it's true about all women, but I think there's a truth in a lot of cases. That, you know, the thought of like dying, God forbid, is bad enough. But you imagine your husband with another woman, and that's like a whole other level of pain. The Medrash puts that into Chava. It's unbelievable. It was so real, so human. Or the other hand, the other opinion in that same Medrash, which was not as far as that, but still very human. If I'm going to die, I don't want to die alone. You know, I'd rather, you know, again, in a certain sense it's twisted. You know, certain other women would say, okay, I'm going to die, but I don't want to show my husband to die. But you could also see other kind of human beings, and here I don't know if it's necessarily women versus men. It's just in this case, it was Chava. If I'm going to die, I don't want to be there alone. You know, I don't want to be the only one. So you saw, those are just two examples, but we saw this from a number of Mepharshim who did see universal truths to this story, and I think there's great universal truth to a lot of these comments, but I don't know if that's the same thing as saying it wasn't, Hashem wasn't talking to them as individuals. I think Hashem was, and I think that's why they end up getting punished. Just to mention, you see just the next three Mepharshim I have on the sheet are also, again, each one of them is adding a different nuance, but again, it's all in the same vein as what we've seen until now. So for example, you have Barbanel. Again, in light of the comment of the Ramban, we could, so to speak, put each of these in different categories. But the Ramban says, for example, that when Adam saw that he had been caught, if you remember the Ramban, when he's on the other side of the sheet, said that Hashem was basically like a prosecuting attorney. Adam, I caught you. You know, you're contradicting yourself. On the one hand, you say you're a tzaddik. On the other hand, you're aware of your sexuality, which could only have happened if you ate the etzadas. Uh-oh, Adam's caught. So that's what the Ramban continues and says, when Adam realized that he was caught, he had been caught in a contradiction, he was forced to admit the truth. Omer, and he said that, you know, the woman did it. Namely, Rasul Omer, it's not that I did it on my own. Rather, it was because my wife seduced me, she got me to do it. And why did I listen to her? Underlined part. You gave her to me to be a helpmate. So why shouldn't I have trusted her? Shimlo Cain. Again, subtle twist. Lama nasat osoli. Why else did you give her to me if it wouldn't have been for me to listen to her? Right? Halavai, all husbands should be so dutiful. Right? I listened to everything my wife said. After all, you gave her to me. Why shouldn't I have listened? Or, for example, the Chizkuni says in the next, again, similar idea, you gave me this woman, Liotli Lazer, to be a helpmate. Right? So it's just a different language. The Rabbi Benel used the word l'ha'amin to, I would, you know, which I to believe here that the Chizkuni uses the term liftoach, to trust her. I never would have thought she'd do anything that would be hurtful to me. I trusted that everything she would do would be helpful to me. And now, getting to Jean's point, says the Chizkuni, and I don't know if any other Mepharshim say it, but the Chizkuni does, a new nuance. Gama yadati me'ezaz eight snali. I didn't even know what tree it was from. She gave me a nice delicious looking fruit. There's a lot of trees in the garden. I haven't eaten from all of them. It's only been 8 hours. I didn't even know which one it was. And how do we know this? Hainu d'chsev says the Chizkuni, ki nas nali min ha'etz. Right? Adam said she gave me from the tree. Lo k'siv eitz hadas. Adam does not say from the eitz hadas.
Hashem didn't use that expression. Hashem said
eight. Well, that was Bernie's answer. And that's why... Right. So that's probably why the other Mepharshim don't say this. The Chizkuni and Jean want to be medayik, and I think it's a reasonable diyuk. That it's, yeah, you're very good company. That she, this is part of his excuse. Again, it's a new layer. So it's not just that you're blaming Chava for doing it. It's, I didn't even know what she was doing. And, by the way, also, you know, you gave her to me. Last point on this, and then we'll be ready to do a few minutes to conclude the shiur on the final Pasuk on Pasuk Yud Gimel. And that is the Sforno here, who also points out, again, the same idea, that by making this comment, Bazeh, this way, says the Sforno, Yiches Ashmaso Lekono. He is focusing, he's shifting his blame, not only in Chava, but on his master, on Hashem. Tmuras, and here is the ultimate Musar, after all said and done. All these Mepharshim, they can all be summarized in this one sentence. This, by blaming Hashem, or it could have been Chava too, but in this case, blaming Hashem, this is instead of Tmuras Hachuvah Shai Surilo. All of this should be contrasted with what he should have said, Kemosh Asa David LaNasan, as David famously says to Nasan Hanavi when he confronts him about what he did right with his wife or what his new wife Bathsheba, Ba'amro El Nasan. What does David say after all said and done? Chatasi. Right. Everything else is commentary. Right. The question is: are you taking responsibility or are you not? David said Chatasi. Says the Sforno. Everything else that Adam is doing, he's shifting. It's Chava. It's Hashem. It's this. It's that. At the end of the day, it's all the same thing, and it's what it's not. It's not saying chatasi. It's not accepting responsibility. It is the blame game.
Which is
is interesting because there's a connection between Adam and David, which he says that Adam gave
birth. Right, interesting. Okay, so we're finally up to Pasuk Gimel, when Hashem then finally confronts Chava and says to the woman, Ma zos asisa, right? And Harry made the point that Hashem does not confront Chava directly. Why did you eat from the tree, the way he did to Adam, or did you eat from the tree to Adam? Rather speaks in a more generic, general term, what did you do? Ma zos asisa. And again, what's good for the goose, good for the gander. Chava then responds, well, it's the snake's fault. So take a look at the Sforno. Again, the point which we saw before, that Hashem is again speaking in veiled terms. You know, we didn't just come out and say, Chava, I know you did it. Come on. Then Hashem knows, right? Why is he asking these questions? So the Sforno repeats once again, Amar Zeh, La'orer gam osa el tshuva. Again, he's not asking because he wants an answer, but sometimes you ask a question, and we do this with our children sometimes, just to get them, hopefully, by bringing up the issue, hopefully their better conscience or their guilt, either way, will take over, and they'll just cop to it and apologize. So that's what that's why Hashem was doing it. But lo and behold, it didn't work. So the Ramban says something very interesting, and the Ramban is the one who notes, I think, whether it was Harry or Eitan, who mentioned this idea that, the Pasuk speaks generally. As the Ramban says in the next source, La'avor al mitzvosai. Hashem saying, why did you transgress my mitzvah? In the most general sense, the Ramban doesn't, Hashem didn't specify a mitzvah. Why, says the Ramban? Ki ha'isha bechlal asharas adam. First of all, when it comes to not eating, Chava should have known better. She was included in that original prohibition. Again, this is against some of the earlier sources we've seen in previous Urim. Ki haisa etzem yatzmav be'esahi. She was part of him. That was before she was separated from his rib. And in that sense, so to speak, she should have been aware. The rib knew. So when the rib turned into Chava, says the Ramban, she should have known. That's not an excuse. V'chein, hi b'chlal ha'onesh shelo. And therefore, the same reason he's getting punished for eating the fruit from the tree, she also deserved to get punished. V'lo amar b'isha v'toch li min ha'etz. So if that's the case, she's really deserving of punishment for eating the tree herself. Why didn't Hashem confront her on that? Says the Ramban, ki hi ne'ensha al achilasa, but not only on her eating, but she did two things wrong. On the fact that she got Adam to do it as well. Just like the snake who didn't eat anything. So the snake gets punished for getting her to do it. She gets punished. She's the only one who did two things wrong. The snake did one thing wrong, and Adam did one thing wrong. She did two things wrong. She ate, and she got Adam to do it. And that's why she said, don't blame me for trying to get Adam to do it. After all, the snake did the same thing to me. So the Ramban says, and why did that not work? Ki onesh hagadol. Interestingly enough, I might have thought otherwise, but says the Ramban, ha'onesh hagadol al ha'achila. The Ramban says that ultimately what she did by eating was worse than what she did by getting Adam to do it. Now, I wonder why. The Ramban, to me, does not really explain why that is. That's how I read the psukim. Why do you think that is? If you would have asked me, I would have thought that what she did to Adam was worse. But the Ramban...
She wouldn't have done it.
So I guess I was thinking, let's see what ideas we can come up with. So one idea is, right, that was the prime cause. If she had never eaten it, she never would have eaten it, she never would have tried to get chava. That's one possibility. Any other ideas?
Well, it was an act. It was an actual act that she did.
Okay.
Just a thought, not just
or words. Okay. Good, that's two. Any others? Why else do you think, why would this be true? Again, you could just disagree too, but if we're going to go with the Ramban, who says that was the worst of what she did, why would that be worse?
Well, if she and he didn't, they would always be like in two different states. She would no longer be an Azer Kenegdo, because she would have the tallness that he wouldn't, so they wouldn't really be as compatible anymore.
She broke off the marriage already. Okay, good.
Their concept of somebody who is poured together, that is kind of starts the floodgate.
Right. Well, that's kind of like what Gene said, which is that's the first thing, right? That shattered the idyllic world, right? The other possibility I was thinking of, these are all good ideas, I'm just speculating myself, was that her eating was really a chet to Hashem. And that's, if you will, benam lamakam, right? She rebelled against Hashem by eating. By getting Aram to do it, she wasn't being nice, and she was tripping him up. But I don't know if that is the same thing. That wasn't what the mitzvah wasn't. Don't get Adam to eat. The mitzvah was, or don't get Chava to eat. It was don't eat yourself. Right. The getting him to eat or offering it to him, however she enticed him or didn't entice him. I guess, unless the Ramban thinks in this case, Again, it worse in one respect, but maybe it's considered more rebellious in such a context.
Isn't it interesting? As we say, Anishmiyat and
well, that's true. No one gets to blame.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting that the language that Adam uses when he speaks to Hashem, he says, Ha'isha Asher Nasata Imodi.
With me.
In other words, as an equal, rather than.
Well, yeah, okay, and, right. Right, he didn't say Shnasata Li, which is the way the Mefarshim actually used the term.
Yeah, the Mefarshim changed it to say Shnasata Li,
right.
Which would put her at a lesser level.
Maybe.
And perhaps by being at an equal level, he has less of the opportunity to deny doing what she says to do. In other words, if they're equals, mm-hmm. You know, if she belongs to him as well,
right.
He doesn't have to listen to her.
Right.
The fact that they're equals, it's more difficult for him.
That's
to...
That's what
Chris
says.
Or her said that?
What?
That the reason why he ate is because like their desires were almost the same, that they were so, you know, they belonged so much to each other that since she wanted to eat, like he was right there with her, and just her wanting to eat is what made him want to eat it also.
That's
when
why
she
I know
One more comment, then I just want to finish up. Yeah.
The eating is worse because if you look at the description, it's giving it to your taiva. I mean, that's the whole thing. If she sees it, she smells it, she looks at it, she just got to have it. When you get to that point where you give yourself over to that, that is worse than, you know, all the other things.
Right, especially if you wanted to add some of those Midrashim, which painted her as almost a tragic figure. She's lonely, she's scared, she's going to die, you know, the snake's going to get married to Adam, another woman's going to get married to Adam. You know, you could almost understand why she felt desperate enough to entrap, you know, again, you can't defend it, but you can understand why she's so desperate. But she has no one to blame but herself for getting herself into the mess, which again is all similar shades of what ultimately I think Jean said, which is that was the first thing she did wrong. Everything, you know, and as often is the case, our very aggressive error. We do one thing wrong, and that forces us to make all sorts of other compromises, but it's that first prime cause. It's interesting, just as I alluded to when we were reading the Psukim, and I'll paraphrase it now, but you can see the Radak in that one line, he points out, I think, what he's trying to get at, is that even though if you look at the Pasuk, Chava is just blaming it on the snake, but he reads into Chava basically what Adam had said to Hashem. Namely, not just blaming the one right above, blaming the ultimate source. Like just as we saw that Adam was blaming Chava and blaming Hashem. So the Radak says that's also what Chava was doing. Even though the Pasuk only says she's blaming the snake, but the Radak reads into that, that not just blaming the snake, but blaming Hashem who made the snake. Ata barasa, Hamasu, you're the one who created this seducer. So if it's if Adam could blame you, so why can't I? It's Mamish, you see this dualism. Yes, exactly. Yes, it's unbelievable. Yes, that's correct. I want to conclude, and really, I thought I was done preparing this year, and then it all of a sudden hit me. I was thinking Rashbam's going to ask me a question. And you didn't. Namely, how is the Abarbanel going to understand all of this? If you'll remember, way back when, the Abarbanel said that there was really no talking snake. There was a snake, but it's the same kind of snake you could go see in the zoo. The snake was curling up around the base of the tree. The snake was eating some of the fruit. Chava was looking at the snake so jealous, saying, wow, he gets to touch the tree. He gets to eat from the tree. Why can't I also? And in her mind, as it was so powerful and seductive, it was as if the snake was talking to her. But says the Abarbanel, right, and we've seen subsequently, so each time we came up to another pasuk, you would ask me, Harry, how is the Abarbanel going to understand that pasuk? Like the Torah seems to assume that the snake was a real, you know, seducer and take was talking. So here also, here you have Chava blaming the snake. Doesn't that sound like the snake must have really done something, not been just a nice, innocent, you know, zoo animal? So the Abarbanel, don't worry, he's a creative genius. He understands this pasuk as well. Take a look, and with this we'll conclude. Hine Amar Hashem Yisbarach Lisha. Hashem says to Chava, namely, he's basically accusing her. Ka'omer nasata sama mavis lebaleich baragdoso. You're a terrible woman, Chava. You, so it's basically like you gave this poison to try to kill your husband. Remember, Eitz HaDaas, if you'll eat it, again, we know that it didn't mean literally death, but that was the words that was used. That if you'll eat from the Eitz HaDaas, you'll die. So how could you do this to your husband? Ro'isha tamuz, you deserve to die. Ki'isha ratzchanis, you're a murderer. Right? This is like the oldest story in the book, right? You're murdering your husband. How could you do such a thing? So what does she say to Hashem? She responds to Hashem, Hanacha shishyani bochel, meaning, klola b'mamer zeh, beis varm. Again, once again, the theme from this whole shir has been these invisible double entendres, or these extra layers. She says two things to Hashem. Number one, im tainas ha-hasata shnosn adam hi tova. If Adam's claim of shifting responsibility on me, don't blame me, blame Chava, she seduced me, she got me. So gamli heisis ha-nachash. So if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. The snake did it to me. Now here's the key line, Harry. What do you mean the snake did it to me? The Barbanel says the snake didn't do anything. Namely, Bamesher Isiv Ochel Vachai. I saw the snake eat. The snake didn't talk, according to the Barbanel, but I saw the snake eat, and it lived. And that itself, Chava was so twisted from this perspective, she can, you know, so to speak, with a straight face, say to Hashem, that was like someone tricking me, someone seducing me. The very fact that I saw it eat and live, how could I have known that it should be any different for me? That's what got me. And again, it's only true according to the Barbanel, the Shitaso. The snake didn't say anything to me. Okay, Kima Maseo, which is what the snake did, curling up on the tree, eating the fruit. I didn't seduce, again, according to the Pshat and Chumash, I didn't seduce Adam with, you know, fancy words. Again, the Medrash employs certain words, you know, she said this, she said that. But according to the Chumash, according to the Barbanel, she didn't say anything. Right? I just gave it to her. Just like he gave it to me, I gave it to him. That's all. So that's the point number one of the Barbanel. And again, it's fascinating, not only for what he says, but also because we, who have this broader perspective, we know that this is, once again, the Abarabanel being consistent, Lashitaso, where he, so to speak, rereads it, you could say, with a simple reading of the Pasuk, to assume that there was no talking snake. Just to conclude, the second thing he says, Chava was claiming, Eich ekra ani rachonas, how can you claim that I'm a murderer? Kemet shegam kein achalti ani mimenu. I also ate the same thing. V'yaduush lo ratisi lahami sadasmi, and I wasn't trying to kill myself. So, you know, and that's also, you know, that's like that, you can, again, you could switch around a lot of the variables, and it could be the same kind of thing that we all say. We get, you know, I wasn't trying to hurt anybody, I did the same thing myself. The answer is, because you're irresponsible, doesn't mean, you know, that you weren't also trying to be irresponsible to somebody else. That's not really a defense. But again, this is all part of the rationalization and the blame game. And again, what's so interesting to me about this last of Barbanel is, again, is how he figures out a way to keep hope alive, so to speak, to keep his shita still going for yet another pasuk. Where now the last one, Harry, and with this, either you're going to KO the Abarbanel, or you're going to have to admit that he was able to go 12 rounds with you, Harry. What the last thing is going to be, the next pasuk, which is when he gets punished, right? And that was a question we asked in the beginning. If you recall, other mafarshim, some, you know, anachronistically, people who lived before the Abarbanel, other mafarshim, like the Ibn Ezra, had said, is it possible that this really didn't happen? After all, the Ibn Ezra was, you know, the chief rationalist. How could there be a talking snake? But the Ibn Ezra was forced to basically go away from that because he said, well, if it wasn't a talking snake, why was the snake punished? So we're waiting to find out how the Abarbanel will answer it. Harry, it's your last chance to KO the Abarbanel. But if he survives that one, I think he's going to leave on Parakimel unscathed. Okay, so Mr. Shem will pick up with that next week.
I know.